Nisambula Vinaka, you're listening to Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific Ngo Okoroi Hawkins. Coming up,
MPs should listen to what the people are saying and not allow more destruction.
Lawlessness persists in Solomon Islands as Australian troops touch down, and the opposition leader calls for the Prime Minister to step down.
I'm just absolutely proud of the leadership that's been shown.
Pacifica in New Zealand have reached the major COVID-19 vaccination milestone of 90% coverage, and
The level of depression amongst workers who have just had enough. They wanted to go home. They don't want to work anymore.
The Tongan government is sticking to its decision not to facilitate any more repatriation flights this year, despite pleas from RSC workers. Lawlessness continued in Solomon Islands on Friday, even as Australian Defence Force troops and federal police arrived in the country. Police have managed to maintain a semblance of order in the Honiara CBD and the western side of town, with citizens banding together to protect the communities. But it's a totally different story on the eastern side of town, with looters continuing to ransack shops and businesses in broad daylight, including the country's only cigarette-making factory, Solomon Tobacco. The Prime Minister Manase Songovara's personal residence at Lunga was also reportedly set on fire. Meanwhile, the opposition leader Matthew Wale is reiterating his call for the Prime Minister to stand down. Mr. Wale says the basis for the unrest is a political problem, so it requires a political solution. He categorically denies accusation that he has played a part in inciting the unrest and is calling for MPs in the government to leave the coalition in order for the leadership to change.
The situation's a big worry, obviously. I mean, do you know exactly whether the Australians are going to be able to help your local forces to restore control?
Well, I hope so. But ultimately, the Australians cannot provide a solution to our current situation. The situation, the basis for it is political, and therefore the solution to it must also be political. This really calls for leaders to take some decisive action. Now, of course, I've made a call for the Prime Minister to resign, and he has come out defiantly saying he will not resign and has accused me of being behind the protests and riots and so forth, an accusation I categorically deny. So he's defiant and the crowd is defiant. So I'm afraid the Australians coming is great news, but I'm not sure to what extent they can offer solutions. The solution is only political, and so I have repeated my call to members of parliament in the governing coalition to resign from the Prime Minister. If he's that defiant, then MPs should listen to what the people are saying and not allow more destruction. The violence, of course, I do not condone it. The violence is inexcusable, but at the same time, leaders have the decisions to make.
Absolutely, and I know that people from your province have been calling for the Malaitan MPs who are in the coalition government to leave for some time. They've been making that call, but how much of, I'm not sure whether they are listening now or that they're reconsidering, or how much this thing is all just about a Malaita problem with the national government. I know some of the problems are probably spread more nationwide than that.
Well, I think the problems are much, much broader than that. But obviously the Malaita situation and the ongoing, persistent, consistent, persevering persecution of Malaita has brought all this to heel, and the Prime Minister cannot sidestep it. And of course, you know, the Prime Minister, this issue is, of course, or part of it is the China issue as well. Now, in persecuting Malaita and in seeking to bring down Premier Sridhani and his government, the Prime Minister personally made promises to 19 Malaita MPAs of millions of dollars to bring Sridhani down. And the people of Malaita responded to show the Prime Minister that they prefer Sridhani to another puppet. So I think they've been emboldened by what they've been able to do in Malaita to safeguard Sridhani and his government from, you know, outside interests. And they think, I think, that they can do that here. Now, Prime Minister has said that he was elected on the floor of Parliament and will not resign. He wants to be removed on the floor of Parliament. He is very confident because truly he was elected on the floor of Parliament, but it wasn't democracy. It was on the back of logging money and China money and mining money. And so he's confident in his numbers because China is issuing 250,000 each to each MP who remains with Sogavare. So he's confident that that will keep his numbers going into a potential vote of no confidence on the floor of Parliament. So we have a situation of state capture here. The democratic processes of Parliament are paralyzed by the numbers game, the number situation, and Sogavare controls those numbers because he attracts a lot of funding from loggers, and now it's very clear from China. So China is interfering in our domestic politics. That's very, very clear.
What are the prospects for an emergency session of the Parliament where perhaps a motion could be filed against the Prime Minister?
Well, Parliament is actually in session. We couldn't meet yesterday because of the violence. So I'm hoping sometime next week that there will be some reprieve and Parliament can sit. But a motion of no confidence, of course, cannot succeed without the numbers. So I think there is a feeling out there in the public, in the people, that our democratic processes, our system of government, the executive government itself is held captured to these vested interests. And so the interests of the people are sidelined or totally ignored and neglected. And that's why they feel they have to take it up themselves. It's a really tragic situation. It's an unfortunate situation that people lose trust in the democratic processes.
That was Solomon Islands opposition leader Matthew Wallace speaking with Johnny Blades. Pacifica in New Zealand have reached a major vaccination milestone, with 90% of Pacific communities having had their first dose of COVID-19 vaccines. The Minister for Pacific Peoples and Associate Minister of Health, Aupito Williams-Sio, says the milestone reflects the hard work and dedication of Pacific health providers and other community leaders. Targeted initiatives have included pop-up vaccination events, community outreach, a special 0800 vaccine booking number staffed by Pacific language speakers, and vaccination buses. Aupito encourages everyone in Aotearoa who has had their first dose to book their second dose if they haven't already. He spoke with Alicia Foon.
I'm just absolutely proud of the leadership that's been shown, you know, in the past several months to achieve that. And you have to appreciate it by recognizing that we're not a homogenous group. They're all very distinct and different in our languages and cultural norms. And so I think the leadership of our churches, our traditional chiefs and orators, our youth in particular, and women really came to the fore. People put aside their differences. And despite our different languages, we all spoke with one language, and that was about prioritising families and keeping everybody safe.
To be able to get to 90% with first doses is huge, but there's still a way to go, isn't there?
Absolutely. And so whilst the government itself set the goal at 90% based on public health advice, in talking with our own Pacific health providers, we felt it was important to aim higher. And so, yep, we've achieved first dose 90%. That means in 3 weeks' time, hopefully that, you know, they'll all get fully vaccinated. But we'll continue to champion and push for higher rates of vaccination leading up to the Christmas period. That's the goal that all of our providers are working towards. I spent the weekend in Porirua and Hutt Valley. I'll be heading down to Dunedin and Oamaru just to make sure that people are confident and that we're all aligned, and then back in the weekend up to Auckland.
A huge reason why this has been so successful has been because of a number of reasons, but really it has come down to Pacific leaders and health providers taking the lead, taking charge in this, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, they are delivering on the government's response. And one of the things that was important for them is to have the flexibility in terms of the contractual arrangements. And we were able to provide that flexibility by reaching directly into those providers, getting a better understanding of their needs, getting a better understanding of the challenges that they were facing, and just freeing up the resources so that they could be innovative in their approach, because they had a lot of local knowledge and they were very quick off the mark. Nimble is the way that they described themselves. But then the other part was really once our youth got involved, we saw some fantastic results. And once our elders gave our young people the confidence to lead a lot of those pop-up vaccination, it made the job of our health providers a lot easier, because everything got organized by our young people and the churches got behind them. They were making the calls, and our health providers, all they needed to do was turn up and do the vaccination.
Hundreds of Tongan RSE workers stranded in New Zealand for 2 years want to get home to their families, but the government says not yet. This week, the Tongan government called off repatriation flights originally scheduled for last Tuesday and then next Tuesday. They say there will not be any flights before the new year. Don Wiseman has more.
A liaison for the workers under the recognised seasonal employer scheme, Sofita Haole, this week wrote to the newly elected MPs pleading with them to sort out the repatriation system. The flight cancellations this week are a result of last month's, which carried a COVID positive person to Tonga, their first case of the virus. But Mr. Haole says there has to be a better way. He wants the government to increase facilities for quarantine and to charter a plane exclusively for the workers. He says some of the workers are able to handle the long separation from family better than others.
There are people who are no longer able to work to their full capacity. The level of depression amongst workers who have just had enough. They wanted to go home. They don't want to work anymore. And there are also people who have been here all this time, and they see being here as a blessing, because the need for them to go home is such that they prefer to be here to support their families.
Vai Okafalau is providing pastoral care for the Tongan workers. He says there's no doubt some of them are distressed and should go home.
They need to go home. It's been away too long. They need to go home and see the family and refuel, and they come back. Now the border's open. It'll do them a whole lot good.
Moala Pau is an RSE worker in the Bay of Plenty. She says some are not happy with the situation they now find themselves in.
Some are not feeling well and not happy we're stuck here. RSE and employers agree us that we come and then go back home for a few months, relax, see the families, and then come back.
Employers spoken to by RNZ Pacific didn't want to go on the record, but the general tenor of what they have told us is while the Tongan workers continue to perform their duties well, there's a clear need for some to get back to reconnect with their families. The Tongan government says it's doing all it can to get the RSE workers back, but it also has other priorities. Last month's positive COVID case, which arrived in a repatriation flight from Christchurch, sparked a lockdown on the main island and confirmed in the government's mind their cautious approach is the right one. But the chief executive of Tonga's Ministry of Internal Affairs, Fotu Fisa'ihi, told me the government is committed to bringing the workers home.
But at a time which we think will be safe for all. There are other citizens there. There are more Tongan citizens stranded in New Zealand and Australia, more than the RSE. And they both have the agency. So we can't just look at RSE without considering the other Tongan citizens there in New Zealand and Australia. There are some people in Fiji, people in China, people in Thailand, students are in China, students are in Japan.
He says there'll be no flights until possibly the middle of January. Dr. Fisa'ihi says if the RSE workers want a chartered flight provided, they would have to be negotiated by them and their RSE employers, that the Tonga government would have no role in it. If they did manage to charter a flight, they still couldn't enter the country before 2022. He says there's also no way Tonga can extend its current quarantine capacity beyond 300.
A Pacific community leader in New Zealand says the government must take some responsibility for the decline of Pasifika language speakers in Aotearoa. The 2018 Stats New Zealand data shows close to 400,000, or 8% of the total population, are Pacific Islanders. This is up from 7.4% in 2013. However, only 37% of Pasifika in Aotearoa can speak their own language. Critics say the government has not done enough to address this growing problem, as Christine Ravoy reports.
When preparing to carry out a great task, our ancestors would tell us to tighten our coconut sinnet belts. These belts represent the communal and family ties that bind us together, giving us strength and endurance. That was a message from Rotuman community elder Rosarine Pinchueli during their virtual language week earlier this year. This week, the New Zealand government reiterated that call when it launched the Leo Moana o Aotearoa Pacific Languages Survey, a first for the country. The Minister for Pacific Peoples, Aupito Williams-Seo, is calling on Pasifika to work together to keep their language and culture alive.
This survey will enable a greater reach, will be able to penetrate into sectors of our community that may have not had the opportunity to voice their views around languages, that will be able to have greater reach into our youth population.
The Stats New Zealand data also show that people from New Zealand's realm countries, Niue, Tokelau and the Cook Islands, have the lowest number of speakers. There are close to 31,000 Niueans in Aotearoa, with 80% in Auckland, but only 20% of them can speak Wangahao Niue. Mele Nemaia, chair of the Niue Wangahao Trust, says that this is evident the government has not paid much attention to its Pacific Island states.
Where is the obligation to Niue, Tokelau and the Cook Islands? We are a minority within a minority. This is a number game. We're going to miss out. The population of the Niue people is nowhere near the population of our Tongans and our Samoan colleagues. But the thing is, they need to specifically, don't just lump us all into one basket.
In 2019, New Zealand committed $20 million over 4 years to support Pacific communities. But Mele Nemaia says it's not enough, and what happens when the four-year agreement ends?
Yes, they gave us money to run these language weeks, but language is just not a one-week activity. It is our everyday, it's our livelihood, our language. It's my identity. So they gave us so little, and yet in return, they ask us for so much.
Aupito Williams-Seo is adamant the government is doing everything it can, adding the focus now is on the Pasifika youth.
Where the languages and cultures are still important. But I think it's even more important now that we're saying to them that some languages are endangered, other languages need to maintain strengthening, and of course other languages we have to raise its profile.
Rotuman language tutor Fisaito Solomone says while there has been a slight increase in the number of speakers in her community, she wants to see better results.
There's a lot of fluent speakers. But if you look at the younger population we have now, the generation in the next 5 to 10 years, there's the gap that we don't know as the elders and the older generation starts to, you know, leave, then our young ones will be at risk, very high risk, because not many of them speak the language.
The Leo Moana o Aotearoa Pacific Languages Survey opens through December 2021. The survey is part of a wider project aimed at supporting Gagana Samoa, Lea Whakatonga, Te Gana Tuvalu, Te Gagana Tokelau, Wangahao Niue, Te Reo Māori Kuki Airani, Vosa Vakaviti, Whaiang Rotuam, and Te Taitai Nikiribas.
That brings us to the end of Pacific Waves for today. Remember, you can download us free to your device from Spotify, iHeart or Apple Podcasts. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Mō te manawa.